Hello, my name is Michael Connor, and I am the CEO and president of the Agile Evolutionary Group. And I want to welcome you to the new podcast series called Voices for Excellence. This year, we're going to have some of the top education leaders who ground excellence and equity in their work every day. And to celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month, I have two guests with me. I think these are probably the two best, and this is a biased, but an objective statement I'm about to say. These are the two most powerful and provocative superintendents in our country. I'd like to welcome you, Ms. Zandra Jo Galvin, who is the superintendent of Greenfield School District in Greenfield, California. She is, I would say, one of the most powerful individuals in the field of education. She just joined the ILOS board just recently, and she has been serving as the president of CALSA. So, and she has just a lot of people just following her with regards to her work and underscoring her work into their work. So we're seeing that leverage. So it's great to have you on, Zandra. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Connor. Honor and privilege to be here.
Thank you. And I would like to introduce Dr. Alex Marrero, who is the superintendent of the Denver Public Schools in Denver, Colorado. Again, like I said, I'm biased because Alex is not only just a personal friend, but he's an equity warrior. True to that, he's bringing a lot of leverage to Denver. And also, he is an ILOS board member as well. So when I say I'm going to bring on some pretty predominant heavyweights on this program, yes. And we're going to start this out because if we really want to make the change that we do in education, we have to have our voices of the leaders that are doing the work to provide some strategies for this. So this is going to be a conversation, Alex and Z, and I'm looking forward to it, but I want to have kind of like this icebreaker question, okay? So I always like, and I completely stole this from Dr. Tracy Davis, who was the former superintendent of Reno. And when you walk in your school district, and I'm going to start with Zandra, what is your equity song? I'm going to give you an example. Like when I walk in, you know, into a meeting or into a room or whatever, you know, I want people to think of James Brown's Super Bad, right? That's my equity song. So, Zandra, when you walk in a room, what comes to mind when participants like Alex or myself are hearing you speak for the first time?
Awesome. Well, thank you for that question. There's so many songs because, as you know, I love music, but I am at the tail end of an equity women in leadership conference right now. And so I adore my brown girls every day of the week, my black girls, my just young girls. And so my song, when I think equity and just empowering our young girls, is Rise Up by Andra Day.
That is,
yes. Because we, no matter how many times we get knocked down as people, as women, as individuals, we will rise up. And when we rise up, we will rise up louder, prouder, and better than we were found before.
And you know what, Zandra, that song definitely resonates with me when I see you because of your voice and your vitality in your voice and your passion for equity speaks for yourself. Alex, what's your equity song? Or I should say, Dr. Marrero, I apologize.
No, Alex is fine. Alex is fine. Thank you. And when you said bottom, that's me. Top is Sandra. When you said provocative, that's me. Powerful, that's Sandra. All right. So for the folks listening, if you wanted to see who was who out of the bunch, I'm going to answer the question because I'm going to be a good panelist, but then I'm going to disrupt because that's what we do. Right. So here's the answer. Equity song is Fight the Power by Public Enemy. Right. Ooh. So that message is very clear. It's very in your face. It's very gritty. And just like you, the most sophisticated educator that I know, you can get there and, you know, I can get there. Sometimes you need to show people. So that's really a disruptive song. Sandra, you motivated me to identify a lot of what sometimes, I should say, gets put to the wayside, unfortunately, right? We speak a whole lot about equity, educational equity, of course, racial, cultural, and when it comes to gender. So I want to give you a female one as well. Am I allowed to, Michael Connor?
Absolutely,
yes,
please.
All right. So UNITY from Queen Latifah. If you don't know that song, listen to it. I'm actually haven't heard that in a long, long time. And that's more so here in Denver, because I've been tasked to unify this district in which there's really opposing views. So fight the power, scratch, 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 scratch. DJ turns on UNITY.
Wow. I tell you, so we got to fight the power. And Alex, I know what you mean by that. I'm right along with you. I'm right along with your brother. And you know what? I also, you know, with that Queen Latifah and fight the power, absolutely, with Zandra too. Woo. Now, I want to underscore a point, Alex, that you had made around racial equity, right? Cultural equity. When we talk about gender equity as well. You talked about what I thought, what word comes to me is conciliation, right? Unification. Now, based off of that, define equity. And how does it look like in your district in the context of racial equity, cultural equity, and gender equity?
Very good, very good. So thank you for that question. I'm a little bit of a broken record because sometimes you really just need to articulate to make sure everybody in the organization understands what our function and mission and collective responsibility is. So we're educators. So education is our core function. And I don't think anybody will dispute that, right? Teaching and learning, meat, potatoes, curriculum instruction, our students need to grow. That is our core function. But here in DPS, in Denver Public Schools, equity is our mission. So I inherited an incredible, elaborate equity statement. And I said, if we're going to be about this work, and if educational equity is going to be our collective responsibility, we don't need a nice statement that lives out here, our mission statement now, right? So equity is our mission, education is our core function, and our collective responsibility for everybody in the organization is educational equity. I just simply don't think a statement is enough at times. It needs to be embedded in what you do. So the actions that each of us take on a daily basis allow us to make the necessary changes that will ultimately help us dismantle oppressive systems and structures and focus on racial and educational equity for all students here in DPS and team members as well. So a lot goes into that. I know that sounds very flowery. It's not easy work. It's uncomfortable work. And when I came on board, that's the first thing that I addressed via, you know, listening, learning to, or making sure that the community that I'm about to serve is ready and wants that work. Right. So as a superintendent, I think everybody here will agree. And if you're listening and you're aspiring, don't take the job until you understand what the calling is. Because if your community is not about this work, then you are not going to be successful. But even worse, you're going to grow frustrated. So I was validated when I came in saying, okay, this community wants this. So I had the marching orders as a public servant, community led, now district supported. And then came the hard work in terms of looking at the organization and restructuring and rebuilding. And when you shuffle things around, you know, the good stay and then the cream ultimately rise to the top.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Zandra, can you just build upon that answer and the question as well?
Love it. Love it. Dr. Marrero, that's a beautiful answer because that's exactly what it is. So I am now 6 years into the superintendency. And so my heavy lifting was years 1, 2, and 3, because that's when you have to address those challenges, the status quo that you inherit that people are cool with. Like, people are happy living in their lane and doing what they've been allowed to do. But does it answer the call of an equity-driven organization? And that's the question. So I'm going to put an exclamation mark on some of the things my brother said. So number one, your why. You always need to lead with your why. And you have to rally around that why of an equity-driven organization. And I don't mean flavorful equity that people are just tossing around today. I'm talking about action. I'm talking about when you look at your district vision and mission statement and your core values and your very simply put strategic plan, what's it all about? And where districts put their money tells a lot about who they value in their organization. If you looked at, in California, we have a thing called the LCAP, the Local Control Accountability Plan. Every state has their accountability plan associated with metrics and accountability and so forth with your Department of Education. For us, every single action item that I'm putting my millions and millions of dollars into are closest to kids as possible. That's not only saying the why of my district being 98% Latino, 95% students in poverty. If I don't do anything about it as a leader to make sure that I break students free from the cycle of poverty, I am one of a team. On the back of the business card for every single one of my team members says this: all means all, I am an elite team member dedicated to the arduous task of saving students' lives. When I say saving students' lives, it is breaking them free from the cycle of poverty. Every single action must be led with intentionality. And I'll give you a couple examples of what's in my LCAP. Every single year, every single child from preschool through the secondary goes to a college or a university. We have strategically mapped that out. So every single year, they are walking on a campus, feeling the vibe of post-secondary education. Another example is I dedicate team members to engage our families, because if my families don't know what we're all about with our equity-driven work of making sure that there's a opportunity for every child to dismantle robots, for a child to look at the computer digital age and become digital, you know, citizens of this world, and just make sure that we are responding to the needs of the job market trends within my communities. Because another thing that we know is we are a familial culture. I am a Latina. We are very familiar. Our children go away, but guess what? They come back. Why? Because we are such a tight-knit community. So I must engage in the equity work, our parent community, so that they are educated in, if the job market trends in my valley, Silicon Valley, Salinas Valley, is computer science, engineering, tech world, I'm going to make sure that I backwards map every single skill associated with that so they have that opportunity. And I also will train our parents through our LCAP dollars. We have two family community liaisons at every single site. I have a director of community and family engagement, and we have two indigenous native speakers, because in my community, we also have families that come from Mexico predominantly, but also indigenous cultures from the state of Oaxaca. So I have to have team members that also can engage parents. So that's just a couple of them. But I think the equity work is much deeper than the surface level of just the word that a lot of people want to throw around. But then when you start peeling away their plans, you see a lot more truth to that district.
Doc, I love to add on, because she sparked something that I just have to say, incredible work there. How incredible to be a student under your leadership, and also to be a staff member, Sandra, who has that embedded into the system. So incredible. We often think about equity as an outcome. And in doing so, we ask ourselves, okay, where we're headed, where our students headed, what will success on this journey look like? And terrific, right? We can definitely get rid of the obstacles in the way of our students. So equity as an outcome is usually how it's presented. And Sandra said, this equity has become a buzzword, and now it's a little bit of a term that sometimes is even misused. I want to talk a little bit more about equity as a tool, because Sandra just started. You're using it as a tool on how it's embedded into your system. This means that you, and here in DPS, we anchor it in our shared core values. As I mentioned in our mission statement, formerly equity statement, we look at those characteristics in the individual that we bring into this organization. So we won't have to do the heavy lift that sometimes is incredibly unsuccessful of trying to shift a mindset when it comes to efficacy. We've been there. Maybe I can get them to understand their privilege. More times than not, you're not successful there, right? So if you find those individuals who are going to say, yep, that's the organization I want to work for. Why? Because that's their why. And that's what I want to help others achieve. Before we engage in conversation or make decisions, we stop and ask ourselves, is what we're about to do going to help dismantle historical patterns of inequity, including our systems, structures, policies, practice, and mindsets? And that, I think, is the hardest part, because systems, and in my case, is a very large systems, structures can be challenging. The mindset is the hardest thing.
And I wish I was a superintendent listening to both of y'all. I took so much notes just from that one question. I mean, function, core function, where education and or equity is the mission and education is the function. And, you know, Zandra with the system strategies and the classroom strategies and identifying the important skill set identified in the McKinsey Global Report study of Delta 2030. I heard innovation, excellence, and equity as a tool. And now Alex gave a really simplified definition of the Public Education Leadership Project, that framework around structure, systems, stakeholders, resources, and culture that's embedded in the instructional core and mindset. But this is a hard question. I want both of you to think about this. And I'm gonna start with Zandra. We gave all these nuggets to the leaders, right? And I wanna know, Z, and think about this. If I'm gonna apply all those strategies that you and Alex identified, how will I know I reached excellence, equity, and innovation? Because you might have people like me. Hi, I want to see it quantified. I want to see it measurable. What does it look like? What does progress of equity look like? How would you define that? Go ahead, Zandra.
All right, so we're going to go into three pillars. The first pillar is culture. When you walk on a campus, there's a vibe that you pick up when you know that students are thriving, staff is thriving, and outcomes are being achieved. You see the smiles on people's faces. You see the joy in learning. You see parents walking into offices and they're feeling engaged and valued. One of our core values is we will nurture and cultivate the gifts that children bring to us. That's a core value that my Board of Education has set forth for me to carry out with my teens. So first and foremost, it's the culture. When you know that you have systems where all children can achieve to their highest potential, it's that vibe you feel. Secondly, community. Community engagement. And I say community in two shapes. I say it families, as I mentioned before, but I also talk about partnerships. There's so many incredible partners in the ed community that we can lean on to bring in resources and programs and just destruction of any kind of gaps that our children have lost due to being in distance learning for the last, you know, few years. And so the partnerships that I bring in to level that equity playing field and making sure that students have those opportunities right in front of them is Apple for Education. I'm a West Coast partner. They're supporting us constantly. I'm also a Lego Education partner. They're supporting us, sending trainers right now in my school district this week and all of next week. They're sending me trainers from Philadelphia and Florida. They are funding it because they see the potential in the students that we serve. And so FIRST, also a national, international organization for inspiration, you know, science and technology in classrooms, that's another one. So those there is the quantitative data aspects, right? Mm-hmm. It's the vibe, it's the testimonials, it's the talking to students, it's talking to the team members, and they're feeling excited about what's happening within our school district because students are achieving based on our core values. The third one is solidly academics. And that academic piece now has taken two shapes within our current moment. And that is the social emotional side of learning that is now coupled with the academic side. Prior to entering the pandemic, we were so driven and focused on the academic solely and making sure that we only looked at the qualitative data and we saw the numbers and we said, okay, so what are the numbers really telling us? Because there's a root cause to every single score that we see. And so with that, we started humanizing the data. So today, we did it before, but we're doing it more with intentionality now. And the humanizing of the data is figuring out the story behind the number. We saw the national report. Throughout our nation, our students are no longer achieving at the levels they were pre-pandemic. So now it's our job to find the root cause. And so equity is not the same. We are all asked to get in a boat. But guess what? Some of us are in a tugboat, some of us are in a paddle boat, and some of us are in a yacht. I happen to be leading those that are in a tiny little canoe. And so I have to make sure that I lead with incredible intentionality to look at the qualitative data, but then take it to the next step of quantifying the root causes behind it. And I'll tell you, I had a student-led panel to open up the year with beautiful, my brown girls were on stage, because as you know, 98% of my population is who we serve, is brown children. And so I asked them clearly, you know, how do you learn best? What can we do? How can we support you? And the stories that they shared about taking care of siblings, of not being able to have food on the table, to not sure how they were going to get the internet access, was their real truth. That is their narrative that they were living in a time when we were trying to do our best to support all children. So to answer your question, three pillars: culture, community, partnerships, academics, but going deeper than the qualitative data to really quantifying stories, the voice, and the root causes behind what's going to get us beyond our current situation into a truly equity-driven organization.
And Zandra, you're a quote you just stated, in your response was just it perfectly outlines the AC stage of education. You said equity is not the same, right? And I've been pushing people to not to say let's go back to the same, because if we go back to the same in the BC stage of education, we've seen these egregious disparities, right, among Black and brown students. Moreover, I like to say it's kind of like this really intensified way of saying separate but equal. We saw it at its most persistent point in the during COVID stage of education. And when you looked at your three pillars, right, I started to think about closing the access gap, closing the opportunity gap, closing the performance gap, closing the expectations gap, right? So you can easily, eloquently identify how you're targeting equity and excellence in your district. Moreover, the opportunities that you're providing for them and giving them voice. You're giving students voice. That's the opportunity gap that we are closing. Alex, you are an equity warrior, an equity broker. I can't wait to hear you with this answer.
This answer is not easy. Boy, Galvan got it all together, doesn't she? This is the journey, right? This is, your question is, what does it look like at the end? I want to start at the beginning if I can, right? So, and I know a lot of us and those who are listening, I know that you can resonate with what I'm about to say. Initially, you know you're heading in the right direction because people get uncomfortable. People start to attack, and people may even start to allege and make false allegations because we are easy target, especially if you're a person of color in charge or at the charge, right? So that's first and foremost. That's always a good indication when you start getting a little bit of hate mail and, you know, side eyes and even some funny tweets, if you will, in response to what you put out there. That's, to me, a good indication. Okay, the haters are out. That means that what we're about to embark on is threatening to what they call security. So, no. Yeah. Now, keeping the end in mind, right? If we want all learners, great.
Preach, Alex, preach.
If we want all learners to thrive, and I love that word, Sandra, thrive. It actually is our vision statement: all learners thrive. Thrive is such an incredible word, because not only is it hard to define, you can't pinpoint and say, okay, it's based on the test score, which we know that that's not going to be beneficial and well-rounded enough to qualify a lot of the students that we support. Thriving has different iterations. Sandra, you mentioned on the community piece, and I want to speak in terms of what it will look like in my opinion, my humble opinion, because what it looks like, I don't know if we've seen that, right? We've seen pockets of excellence in a classroom, perhaps in a district, but in society, we haven't seen that, right? I don't think you guys will argue with me. We have a whole lot of more work to do. Mm-hmm. But I have a saying: community engagement. It's terrific, right? I'm going to go and let you in and say, okay, weigh in on this. I've engaged you. Then the next tier, I would say maybe it's community involvement. Not only are you engaged, I'm bringing you in. Okay, tell me a little bit more. Even better. And here's where people are afraid to go. And I'm going to make the connection to equity. So from engagement to empowerment, I'm sorry, from engagement to involvement, ultimately to empowerment. because that means that someone has to relinquish some of their power, and people don't like to do that, right? Very easily, I'll share this cup of water, Sandra, if you're thirsty, with you. I'll share my food with you, Michael, if you're hungry. Mm-hmm. But in certain cases, if I'm in charge, I'm not sharing not one ounce of it. I'm making the decisions around here, right? So that's when I believe we've gotten to a place in which it's not all about one, right? And I joke as if I'm the one in that position. Yes, I'm in the seat, but I'm not the one that people need to be concerned about. It's other folks who are holding on to their security. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of how I think it can look like at the end. In terms of how difficult it is to answer this question, because I think that we're right now preparing students for jobs that don't exist, right? Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me to place a kid there, but here's where I think we can be innovative. The kids know a lot more than what we do in terms of what that looks like. So possibly empowering, just like we will empower the community, the students, right? Instead of you being engaged, meaning you're astute and listening to the lesson, that's not enough. Involved, they're collaborating. We all know, we're teachers or we evaluate teachers. That's the other level of mastery in the classroom. But empowerment means that now they're calling some more of the shots, right? I haven't seen that shift happen even in the classroom. In terms of what we're looking to do and what I would love to do is not knowing what those roles are going to be in the future. I have a duty to make sure that our students are globally competent. I don't want any discussion about the zip codes and the little bubble that you grew up in, which I was a victim to for the majority of my life, not just as a youngster, right? I was an adult and I was a principal thinking that the only bubble that existed was Bronx, New York, because mm-hmm. I simply didn't explore. I didn't burst that bubble yet. But we have a duty to make sure that our students are going to thrive in the global market, right? Being globally competent, being able to put roots and do great work no matter where it is, Taiwan, Egypt, or South Florida, or Canada. Making sure that they can thrive locally and globally. And I'll say that in terms of when we achieve it, we'll achieve equity when we dismantle deeply rooted systems and oppression that have historically resulted in equitable access and distribution of opportunities and resources for those who represent marginalized identities. And that includes race, ethnicity, gender identity, sexual orientation, language, and ability. So simply put, when the gaps don't exist. So we haven't gotten there yet, because all we see is gaps, and even more so after the pandemic. A great colleague of all of ours, I know that you two know him and are very fond, and I am a huge fan, is our former chancellor of New York City. He has an incredible way of depicting the Jeffersonian model of education that is still plaguing our system. Mm-hmm. So if you don't know that, I don't want to steal his little script, but it goes a little something like this. It goes, once upon a time, there was a system for the learned. That's not a mistake for those who are trying to edit it. It's learned. The learned, ED at the end.
Alex, yes, preach, go ahead.
And during that time, Sandra, you were not going to be part of that because you're Latina. On top of that, you're a female. So you get the double whammy, right? I was not going to be a part of that, although I'm a fairly light-skinned, not light-skinned enough, right? The Marrero has too many vowels and R's. Marrero, right? Right. And Michael, you know you're not going to be there either. Right.
Yep.
And there was another group, right, that they called the rubbish. And sometimes you'll be able to scrape someone out of that rubbish. So I'm proud to say that I'm in here with rubbish, because I was part of that group too. No one thought that I was going to make it. If you consider this making it, right, it's all relative. I was supposed to be a statistic, like Miguel, like Gregory, like Alberto. Right. And those are folks that I know who some aren't here because they unfortunately fell victim to the system back home. Mm-hmm. You, Michael, are part of the rubbish. Sandra, you're part of the rubbish. And I don't mean that to insult. It's supposed to impact you because that's how people see us out here.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to unpack from both you. Both of you as dynamic equity leaders. But we also have a lot of people, or I should say a lot of participants on this podcast that are either looking to become superintendents or, Alex, like you said, those equity warriors who are already there trying to make the move for excellence and innovation, but will obviously deal with barriers. You talked about, you know, the haters, Alex. Kobe Bryant has this favorite quote, learn to love the hate. They hate the great ones. And both of you, Alex and Xandra, are great. Please, as this is the last question, coming in as a new superintendent, coming in as a superintendent that follows Dr. Marrero and Ms. Jo Galvin, right? Coming in seeing I'm a Latina or Black woman superintendent, and I see Ms. Jo Galvin making the moves. I'm a young African-American or Latino in the United States, and I'm looking at Dr. Marrero as one of my leaders, my go-to as I reference his work, as I reference Sandra's work. Provide some strategies. How do I stay in this job if I'm like you and Zen?
All right, that's an incredible question, especially with your listeners. And here, this is not me discouraging anyone. I can't wait to call you colleagues, and the network of support that we have is truly, truly enabling us to survive. You share some incredible statistics, but let me just share the statistics as they are present day. When I left New York, and I was a budding superintendent, ultimately I became one of 15 out of 780 plus districts. So let's round up, let's say it's 800. 15 Latino or Latina, Latinx superintendents. And this is New York, everybody, when they think New York, right? So, and now there's less than five. So that's X amount of years later. So I hope that we don't become extinct like you are forecasting based on the trend in terms of what's happening with our Black leaders. And Sandra, as you know, it's even worse when it comes to our females of color. It's less than 1% across the nation. It's horrible. In terms of advice, I'm going to say, one, make sure that you want to do this. Just getting the title, I understand that itch. I had that itch. I get it. But there's so many folks who go in and come out, and then you have to do a whole lot of rebuilding, and they don't give opportunities for us. Maybe one time you can rebound. Not like some others who just fail, and sometimes do something else even more scandalous and still resurface. That doesn't happen for us, unfortunately. I feel like we should. Everybody deserves to take on a challenge and lose and rebound and come back. But unfortunately for us, we're done. I believe the life expectancy for a superintendent is officially under 3 years now, which is ridiculous. But when you look at our leaders of color, I wonder if it's hovering around 1 year.
1.8, Dr. Marrero.
Look at that. Thank you, researcher. So 1.8. So I have officially passed that. I can't believe it. All right. I'm part of the minority.
Hey, right? I made 4.5 years. I'm a dinosaur.
So I would say the approach. Make sure you do your research. Your time will come at the appropriate time. I do believe, and I don't want to get spiritual, that things happen for a reason, right? So things happened the way that they were supposed to happen for me. Now, I never thought that one day I had this vision of being the proud superintendent of Denver Public Schools, but now I am the proud superintendent of public schools. But I didn't imagine this years ago. In terms of the approach, make sure that you want it, right? And there's so much that I can say about the perils and how we are really set up, not for success, and quite frankly, we're set up for failure, right? Because this job is so, so unforgiving. Incredibly rewarding, right? In spite of all of that, but so unforgiving. Mm-hmm. I want to say that here, and don't take this lightly, make sure I'm going to speak about the Board of Education, who are your bosses, and your approach initially. If you're given the opportunity, as I was here, to engage with the community, you make sure you take that. Because when I came on board here, I got a whole lot of, okay, what is he going to bring to the table? What is his vision? And I had them waiting. I'm sure they grew frustrated, my folks here, because my approach was, who am I? The most ignorant person in Colorado. I know what worked in New York City. I know what worked in East Triumph. I know what worked in New Rochelle. But no way am I going to apply that here. This is not cookie cutter work, right? So I needed to learn. The most ignorant person in the district was Dr. Alex Marrero, and I took a deep, deep listening and learning tour. Yeah. I drew my own conclusions. When they told me, oh, don't talk to Sandra, she's a little this way. Don't talk to Michael, he's a little this way. I met with both of them on the same day, right? To make sure I have both opinions. I drew my own conclusions. I then regurgitated to the community, okay, here's what I heard, and here's your strategic roadmap. This is not Marrero's plan, this is your plan. I believe in community-driven, community-led, district-supported. I believe in the notion of being a public servant. Now I'll end with the Board of Education. The Board of Education here, they campaign a tremendous amount, millions of dollars to get on the seat. And here's why I appreciate public education. Because when I can't tap every person, and we have 90,000 plus students, so you can imagine how many members of the households we have. It's hundreds of thousands of folks that I'll never, even if I'm here 20 years, be able to speak to each and every one of them. The beauty of public education and being duly elected is that by region and even at large, the voice of the community is the folks who govern the system. So I can truly rely and say, okay, board member X, here's what we're thinking. Is this what your community is saying? And I should feel comfortable saying, okay, that's where we're headed as an organization because you're the conduit of the community, right? So I'm never in a position, oh, looking for the next board election. Of course, I will love for my current board to stay because it's about relationships and we build the relationships. I'm not afraid of starting new ones. So if it's a reformer, not concerned because I want to hear if this is what the community wants. If this is a traditional, don't you dare get rid of my school. Okay, let's talk. I'm okay with educational philosophy. But when the day comes and they go against important work like equity, that's my first indication that I need to get out of town. So remember that, folks. Know what you're signing up for and make sure that you are not afraid to do your job because you're afraid to lose your job.
Wow. Essentially. Wow.
And we are done with this podcast, ladies and gentlemen, because that was the best answer ever. I have nothing more to say. Snaps to Dr. Marrero. Absolutely adore everything you said. The work that you're leading, you have to be courageous in this work. Two things. We have to be vulnerable to learning as leaders. And when I say vulnerability, I don't mean weak. Vulnerability is not weakness. It is being honest about, I don't know what I don't know about this community yet as a leader. So vulnerable in the learning, but fierce, extremely unapologetically fierce in leading the work. And so my brother just said so many things that resonate with me. First one is just really knowing what you're signing up for in that community. Is that community right for you? The question you posed was, you know, what kind of advice do we have for people that are wanting to get into this work? Number one, I'm going to tell you, it's the best job I've ever held besides teaching and being a mom. Like, honestly, I love leading a district because my heart is full when I go and I'm able to make sure that I'm meeting the needs and being able to lead teams and meeting the needs of the community. It is also a very lonely world because no one knows what it is to sit at the top seat of the superintendency besides another superintendent. And so my team that I lean on and lead with are other superintendents. My team at home is great and they lead all the work and they understand that work. But when it comes to a board superintendent dynamic or a community superintendent dynamic, you're the frontline administrator. Just like the school building principal is the frontline administrator, the superintendent is a frontline administrator. The buck stops with you, honestly. And then you take and communicate that back to your board. So first and foremost, know what you're getting into because it is powerful, amazing, just incredible work, but it also is heavy, emotional, making sure that you're right, making the best decisions for kids on any day of the week. Statistically speaking, yes, we people of color are way underrepresented. And so we need to increase that number. So a few things that I advise people to do is become part of a network. Be part of a network that will build your skill set and never be afraid to tap someone on the shoulder. Dr. Alex Marrero is a phenomenal leader. He is trailblazing right in Denver Public Schools. He's a leader that should be leaned on. If there's anyone out there that sees the work that he's doing when you're not following him, message him. We are people that will review those messages and we will get back to you because If someone says, I love what you're doing, how can I replicate that in my district? We're there to support you, because when Black and Brown thrive, when students thrive, we all thrive. Secondly, mentorship. Mentorship is an incredible avenue. When I was a first year superintendent, and including my second year, I had a mentor written into my contract because I wanted to prove to everyone, like, I have not arrived yet. Like, I still need to learn, and I still learn today, but I got it in my contract. And then ladies are like, oh, do you really need it? I said, I always need it, but I understand. I have so many friends now in the nation that I can call anyone and they can give me the advice that I need. But I always need a thinking partner. So as a aspiring superintendent, as a seated superintendent, always seek people who you want to emulate. Absolutely. And find out what they're doing, because I want to aspire to do that as well. Yeah. And then the other thing I would say is keep your circles tight. Like, I do lean in and I'm vulnerable with people, but I will reveal my true self and really those things that that I stay up at night worrying about or things that I'm doing with a core circle. So I have a core circle of sister brothers and soups, brother soups and sister soups. I have core groups of a sister circle that I lean on, and I can be my true self. And on any given day, if something's not going my way, and the imposter syndrome sets in, or intersectionality, being a person of color and a female and of this and of this and of this, I can lean in on some people that are my support network, and they will be the wind beneath my wings and remind me to stay in this work. They will remind me that this is a choice. It's a given privilege to lead. And with people like that on your team that will support you, then anything's possible. I'm mentioning to you where I'm at here. I'm just at the tail end of a day full of learning in a Women in Leadership conference, and heard from dynamic speakers, got to speak on a few panels and just share with them. And all of that is about the good heavy lifting when it comes to people like me that are trying their best to do incredible work, but know that there are a lot of people that might be against us. Mm-hmm. And so how do we work together and create an army? Create an infantry that can challenge anything that comes our way, because our kids deserve to have leaders who want to stay in this work, want to defend this work, and starting off what my brother said too, will challenge this work, because we are not, you have to be unapologetic about challenging the status quo. And that is painful. And as you said, it is uncomfortable work. But guess what? When you're the superintendent, I am not in this role to lead to make sure that other people are comfortable. I am here in empowered and entrusted to make sure that I do disrupt your comfort a little or a lot, because in that journey, more students will rise. When I dismantled a college prep system that was only for some, not all, my first year, I had a lot of people against me. I had several parents and my college prep teachers at the podium speaking to the dais about, oh my God, this is horrible. Why are you doing this? Why are you dismantling this elite, you know, program that is serving the elite kids? And I said, listen, your kids don't have to lose for other kids to win. There is enough seat at this table for all kids to win. And so they slowly understood that I wasn't about some for some. I was about all for all, and that every step that we were going to take as a district was going to lead into with clear intentionality about serving all kids. And so to culminate that is just to really make sure that when you're ready for this work, it's there for you. You should aspire to it. If your heart's in the work, you will do amazing work, because your core values are driven by students first. And then know that there will be an army of women and men just like you that have scars, lessons learned, and have overcome, and that will help you lead this work.
On that note, we are going to wrap it up, because that is, I think, again, a lot to unpack and unwrap. I know if I was at the beginning of my own journey and I'm hearing this podcast right now, or even in the intermediate stage of my journey as a superintendent, This whole podcast featured high-level strategies of implementation, defining equity and excellence in a variety of different ways from two different districts, but more importantly, what is that support mechanism and process of development moved on from here. I wish I had this, right? I wish I had this when I started out as a superintendent. And to underscore what Zandra stated, right? Alex and Zandra are not superintendents that will ignore you if you reach out. If we truly want to close the access gap, and if we truly want to move this needle in the AC stage of education, reach out, follow, contact, find out what conferences they're speaking at, because Alex and Zandra are all over the place, right? And I want to thank Dr. Alex Marrero and Ms. Zandra Jo Galvin on being the first participants, or I should say guest, of the podcast with Voices, Voices for Excellence. And thank you for tuning in. There is a QR code I want you to take a look at that is on my website. Pre-order my book. It's called Intentional, Bold, and Unapologetic, A Guide to Transforming Schools in the AC Stage of Education. That book is going to couple all these leaders that we're going to have on this podcast. So thank you, Dr. Marrero. Thank you, Ms. Jo Galvin. And until next time, onward and upward. Take care, everybody.